Thankfully, Stephen Green covered some of the background for me about the fluid gravity duality. So this is work done by myself and Stephen Green and my supervisor, Louise Lehner, who's a faculty member here. The motivation for this work in a broad sense is to probe gravitational physics through the fluid gravity duality. More specifically, we want to test some analytic results that were derived in 2009 by Fuzon and Oz. Expanding on the broad aspect, the fluid gravity duality, is, like Stephen said, is obtainable as a limit from ADS-CFT. However, it can be derived independently, so just logically speaking, it's on more solid footing. It holds in particular in the when we're in the turbulent regime on the fluid side. And the gravity side must contain a black hole or black drain, and this introduces a temperature scale into the problem. And more details on the fluid gravity duality, if you want to see them, are in these two papers by Bhattacharya et al. And Van Ramsdonk. Expanding on the specific motivation, so the fluid side is relativistic hydrodynamics, not Navier-Stokes, although obviously in a limit you'll obtain something like Navier-Stokes. And most of our knowledge of the 2D turbulent regime is for Navier-Stokes. So if we want to use the fluid gravity duality, we have to try to extend the things we know and love in non-relativistic turbulence to the relativistic regime. There's a nice review of 2D turbulence by Boffetta from 2012, if you want to get your feet wet on that. So several steps have already been made in this direction. This paper I already mentioned, deriving some scaling relations. Some work in 2012 by Carrasco and Lehner et al. They showed simply that you still have this inverse energy cascade in the relativistic regime, which is, Stephen spoke about that. And they also generalized the concept of entropy to the relativistic regime. Also, insight from the fluid gravity duality has already pointed the community to novel phenomena in gravity itself. For example, as Stephen mentioned again, turbulent behavior of perturbations of black holes and black drains, in particular showing an inverse energy cascade from short wavelengths to long wavelengths. So check out Adams, Chesler, and Liu in 2013. There's also direct astrophysical applications of studying two-dimensional turbulence, relativistic turbulence, basically any place where you have effectively 2+1 dimensional fluid behavior, in particular a thin accretion disk or a shock front in a supernova, let's say. So I'm going to give you a flavor of the type of arguments you might see in non-relativistic turbulence, something quick and easy, a dimensional argument that gives a result which is found everywhere in nature. So here I'm just saying that the total specific energy, specific meaning energy per unit mass, I'll just say energy from here on, can be written as an integral over all available wave numbers of what's called the spectral energy, E of k. Left-hand side is units of energy per mass, which is just velocity squared. Dk is one over length. So you conclude that the spectral energy is units of length cubed over time squared. If we introduce an ansatz that the energy flow from scale to scale doesn't depend on scale, or in symbols, epsilon is not a function of wave number, and we stipulate that the spectral energy goes like epsilon to some power p and wave number to some power q, where the units of epsilon are, of course, specific energy per time, which is length squared per time cubed, and k again is 1 over length. So we just match units on both sides here, and we can solve for p and q. P comes out to be 2/3, and q comes out to be -5/3. So we conclude that the spectral energy scales as k to the -5/3. Subject to this ansatz that we've made. And this holds in what's called the inverse energy cascade range in 2+1 dimensional turbulence. So this is readily observed in nature. This is data taken from an experiment done with an air jet in laboratory conditions, published by Champagne in 1978. It's a log-log plot. So linear trends are power law behaviors, and we see a very clear -5/3 slope here. So more non-relativistic scaling results. These things called structure functions, velocity structure functions, in particular the third order one, meaning we have a power of 3 here. So what these quantities are is you pick two points, 0 and r, and you take the velocities at those points and you take their difference, take the component in the direction along their separation, which is called the longitudinal component, which we denote here with L. Take the difference, raise it to the third power, and take the ensemble average. And we find in 2D and 3D that you both have linear scaling with the separation, albeit with different proportionality factors. And note that these quantities are very well suited to the non-relativistic turbulence because they're Galilean invariants. They're differences in velocity. So this presents an immediate puzzle thinking about relativity. For the five thirds law, for instance, whose K are we talking about? We have the phenomenon of length contraction. So how do we make sense of the five thirds law? Does it have to be dependent on frames of reference, for instance? Also, for scaling relations, if we're doing relativity, we'd like to talk about something like the energy momentum tensor, TAB, not the spatial velocity. So moving to the relativistic case, a paper I mentioned earlier, very similar images as we saw in Stephen's talk. So this is the vorticity, which is a scalar in two spatial dimensions, so we can be visualized like this. This is a simulation of a perfect fluid with just some initial shear flow, which destabilizes due to numerical errors. Turbulence begins, and what I want you to see here is that from here to here, we're observing qualitatively the inverse energy cascade. Here we have many little vortices, which are small, and at a later time, because vortices of like sign merge and vortices of opposite sign repel, you end up with fewer vortices, which are larger. And note that the assumption that this is a perfect fluid, with introducing viscosity does not change the general behavior, as we saw the results from Stephen's talk. And he also mentioned this paper. So the Fuson and Oz results, what do they state? They state if you take a product of these two components of the energy momentum tensor, 0 means the time component, L means the spatial longitudinal direction, which is parallel with the separation vector R. Take T0L and TLL, take the ensemble average. This is supposed to scale linearly with R. The derivation assumes forced steady state turbulence. So the equations of motions governing it are the divergence of the stress energy is equal to some external force, which has some specific properties. It's a random homogeneous and isotropic field. It also assumes that the separation R, basically this holds for R, which is far away from any forcing scales. So if you're pumping in energy at a certain scale with the forcing, you want to be far away from that, far away from any viscous scales. In other words, in what's called the inertial range, where energy just flows unimpeded. So this means in order to simulate this, we're going to need to construct F in such a way that it's localized in spectral space, so we can restrict the range of length scales at X. Note that the scaling is not even Lorentz invariant. The scalings we saw earlier were Galilean invariants, which is nice, but these are not even Lorentz invariant because the energy momentum tensor, while it is Lorentz covariant, its components are not. So this is part of the difficulty of doing relativistic turbulence. So how are we to understand this? Basically, if you can find a frame of reference where things look homogeneous and isotropic and turbulent, then the scaling is supposed to hold. So our simulation setup, like I mentioned, space time dimension is 2 plus 1, which is computationally inexpensive. And so through the fluid gravity duality, we can learn something about 3 plus 1 gravity. We use a perfect fluid, which has this energy momentum tensor, equation of motion governed by this, as we already saw. And the grid is periodically identified. So it's a two torus, or in less mathematical language, it's the surface of a donut. We also use the Landau frame. So fluid points are fixed and energy moves around as opposed to vice versa. And I just note again that although we're focusing on the perfect fluid, introducing viscosity does not change the general behavior. It just makes the turbulent regime smaller, like the range of scales smaller. So to be useful for the fluid gravity duality, we have to impose conformal invariance of the equations of motion. And if you see in Robert Wald's book on general relativity in Appendix C, he proves that for a perfect fluid, that this can be achieved if and only if the stress energy is traceless. So we just set this up, plug in the perfect fluid, and we get an equation of state unique for the dimensionality of the space-time. P is 1/2 rho. How do we construct F? We build it in Fourier space and transform it to real space, just enforcing this reality condition so that we end up with real numbers in position space. What do? We take an annulus whose inner and outer radii bound the range of length scales that we want to inject energy at, fill up that annulus with random complex numbers, and transform it over. And here we just have two different color schemes. And you see, qualitatively, it's homogeneous and isotropic. So a note about ensemble averages. In general, they're very impractical to compute without statistical symmetries. You'd have to evolve up to a point, get one term in the average, change your initial conditions, evolve up again, get another term, and do this thousands or tens of thousands of times to resolve, depending on what you want to resolve. If you impose statistical homogeneity and isotropy, it reduces to a spatial average, basically an average over pairs of points at a given time. If you impose stationarity in time, it reduces to a time average. So you pick two points and average over time. In practice, we're going to need to use both to resolve the scaling relation because it's statistically quite noisy. If you want some more details on this, there's a nice book on turbulence by Uriel Frisch. So here are the results. So we've averaged over all of space and over 100 times, which are sufficiently separated that we're getting a diverse sample. And these are in the blue and green are the two correlations derived by Fuson and Oz, which are not supposed to vanish under isotropic conditions. And in black, we have the slope of 1, so we have the linear scaling emerging. We've also derived the same linear scaling, albeit with different proportionality factors, with slightly weaker assumptions, suggesting that this scaling ought to be robust, that is, the linear scaling. So just a summary and some future work. So the previous work showed the turbulent inverse cascade occurs in relativistic hydrodynamics in 2 plus 1. The concept of entropy has been generalized. Scaling relations were derived. And the fluid gravity duality has been used to sort of point us into point the community into a direction of where to look for novel phenomenon in gravity. This work numerically measured the scaling relation and showed that the linear scaling persists with modestly weaker assumptions. Future work is to translate these scaling relations into the gravity side, see what they mean, what can we learn, maybe find a relativistic analog of the 5/3 law that doesn't depend on the frame of reference or something, if that's possible, and also explore more relativistic flows. And this really is the point. This is why this is an HPC talk, because in order to do this, we're going to need to parallelize the code. That's it.
Okay, so we're done. Thank you for all the speakers. Mm-hmm.